Hello, everyone, and welcome to the PPC Show, brought to you by AdStage Media Productions. I am Paul Wicker.
And I'm JD Brader.
And today is August 30th, and these are your top headlines in paid marketing. Do you like how I made it more fancy for you, JD? AdStage Media Productions, like we're legit.
It's so legit. I mean, come on. I mean, we have a weekly podcast. We're legit.
Right. 100, I think this is like 182, episode 182. I know this because Spotify's really moving and shaking lately. So as part of our banter section, let me banter a little bit. I set up the PPC Show originally to run on SoundCloud. I just upload it because it's free and quick, and we've been doing this for years, and that was like easy. Then SoundCloud ran out of money as a company, almost went under, disappeared for a few weeks, came back with some emergency funding, but they can go at any moment. SoundCloud is not like a big moneymaker, and that's where all our podcasts are. Anyway, Spotify bought Anchor FM along with Gimlet Media not too long ago, and Anchor FM is a podcast creation app and distribution tool, so I set us up on Anchor.fm. During that process, I learned you can create like a little window to play an ad. So we are actually now a sponsored podcast. Let the pennies roll in.
That's right. That's why it says AdStage Media Production, sponsored by AdStage.
Right. Yeah, that's the free sponsorship I gave myself. And then we said, I just before this podcast recorded the ad I needed to record for, of course, when you're small potatoes, you only have the option to run ads for Anchor.fm. But that's what we're doing. So yeah, so some interesting stuff. I've been learning a lot about Spotify. We integrated them into AdStage. Well, I guess I'm leaking that. We're going to announce it, I think, next week. So I've been learning a lot about podcast metrics, artist metrics, all that fun stuff.
Cool, cool. Well, I missed you last week.
Yeah, I missed you too, buddy. Emma was nice enough to join us from Hennepin Marketing, who is, yeah. Emma and I have teamed up in the past on many a webinar. But she is, no offense, Emma, but she is no JD.
Well, there's only one JD Prater. But Emma did a fantastic job. Really enjoyed her insights. So Emma, if you're listening, thank you for filling in, and I'm also filling in on such short notice. So much appreciated. Good call out for Emma.
And I called you the one and only JD, but apparently I should start calling you Jason.
Yeah.
Because I saw you got a new Apple card, and you put a photo on Twitter, and it said Jason Prater, and everybody on Twitter was like, "Who the heck is that?"
Yeah, I guess I just thought more people knew that, but yeah, it was kind of funny. Yeah, I got the new Apple card, pretty deluxe. It's very cool, very sleek. Not a great points card, rewards card. Would not recommend it as your primary, but it does turn some heads, you know, and that's really what it's all about, Paul.
Right. The barista at Starbucks is like, wow, you must be important.
It was the local barista was like, neat card. And I was like, thanks, bro.
I've made it. I've made it.
Yeah, that's right. The barista at the local coffee shop is jealous.
Right. Mission accomplished. Okay. All right. Well, let me know. I don't know. People talk about it like it's this crazy thing, but I'm like, let me know what it's like to use a credit card. I mean, it's just, yeah, I bet you're going to swipe it a bunch of places. And then there was actually a big article I didn't put in here, but there was an article, I think it was New York Times maybe. There was some guy who like used an Apple card and then an Amazon Chase card and then saw all the data companies who had information about his purchases. And it turns out that like all Amazon's talk about privacy is good because for like in the Apple world, but once like it's still a Visa MasterCard underneath it. It still uses like their systems and backend. So all the purchase data like still gets out into the world and people still all get it. So at least according to this one article, he was saying until the credit card companies themselves like change the way they share data, then Apple does limit what they can share, but they still do share quite a bit.
Very fair. Very true. I guess the key that they're taking there is like Apple's not really using it. You know, I mean, advertising is such a small thing for them anyway when they're global business, right? Mostly a hardware company. So they don't really necessarily need the data, but from what I've read and what I've seen, maybe they're switching. Maybe they're trying to find other revenue sources like a credit card. So
yeah, payments keep coming up. I mean, Facebook, obviously we talked about Bitcoin and not Bitcoin, but Libra, their coin, and getting into payments. I mean, they're definitely a lot of the big tech companies have tried to make money off payments. So this is, maybe it is also not just a way to kind of increase the chance you'll buy stuff on Apple through their, you know, through iTunes, if you're going to like watch movies and consume content, or if they ever roll out like a e-commerce platform. But I think they can make a buck. You can make a buck on this credit card stuff. So we'll see. We'll see if Apple becomes a dominant financial player. So what are you going to do with your card this weekend? You're going to, you know, for Labor Day, go rent a cabana at a private club with your new Apple card?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. No plans for the weekend. Just kind of hanging out, relaxing. We've been on the move for the last six weekends, so it's nice that we don't have people visiting or I'm traveling. So I'm happy to stay put because it's been a very, very busy time. But I'm not leaving, but Meg is. So Meg's headed off for Inbound, the big HubSpot conference. So she's leaving on Monday. So it'll be me and the little guy hanging tough for a solid week.
Whoa.
So, yeah.
Uh-oh. Mr. Mom.
Mr. Mom, that's right.
You have to be old enough to remember that Michael Keaton movie where he, God forbid, takes care of his child.
Oh, man. Really happy he's making a comeback. Just going to say he was out for like 20 years, but I'm glad he's back. Glad right. He's back.
Well, it's just funny that trope of like the dad is taking care of the baby, you know, was really a big hit in the 90s when it was outrageous that a dad could clean a house and take care of a child. Like, that was the premise of the entire movie. Well, congrats on getting some good alone time with your developing child. I also have no plans because Kristen just got back from New York and we're going somewhere. I'm going up camping with all my buddies in Maine and next week. So this is the chill week.
Nice.
And then Cora. So what's been up with Cora? Anything new over there?
Yeah, we got some betas. We got some betas on tap that people should know about. We got lead gen ads, Paul. Lead gen ads. Check it out. Get excited. Being able to match that Quora intent with your audience right there with the lead ad. So closed beta right now. Testing out with a small number of advertisers. If you're interested, reach out. Let me see if I can get you into it. And then we got a few other like smaller ones as well with some gender targeting, some browser targeting. We got some retargeting going on based off of different types of engagement. So it's going to be a fun Q3 rolling into Q4. We've been kind of saving them up. We've been kind of quiet, but it's mostly because we've been developing a new ad unit and then some other capabilities.
Yeah, love me some lead ads. And also when you said gender targeting, I thought you said ginger targeting, and I thought you were joking.
That's right.
About
redheads. You can target AJ Wilcox. AJ, if you're listening to this on 2.5 speed, I did say your name. It probably sounded like, AJ Wilcox. Sorry.
I know a lot of people who listen to podcasts on these high speeds. In fact, there's a guy here that listens to our own show regularly and then always comments on it. David, I'll give David
David.
Shout out. Right. And David at 1.5 speeds. So let's just talk as fast as we humanly can so that they can't understand us because they have sped up the podcast so much.
That was like 3x speeds. Yeah. See?
Yeah. Cool. Well, lead gen ads are always awesome. And I'm just thinking, it's like a sponsored question. And then instead of it just saying, or is it its own creative type? Tell me about your lead gen ads.
Yeah, it'd be like it looks like an image ad, and then you can click on it, and it expands into that sharing of information.
Into so like a form? Like
it'll be a form, and then there'll be a thank you page. So it's like a three-step process. You see the ad, qualify, I give you information, then I get a thank you call to action as well.
Got you. So it's actually like creative as well. Cool. Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, good luck. We're excited. We've been going strong now with Cora and AdSage for a few months now, so we're excited to be...
You just let me know if you want in on that beta, Paul.
Yeah, come on. Come on. Give us some beta action. We're spending some money on the Quora platform. Can I get in the betas or what? How much I got to spend? Who do I got to know over there?
You got to know me. So, yeah, let me know. And I'll get you whitelisted.
Okay. This is me letting you know. All right. Let's talk about some news. Facebook. So the first one, Facebook kind of did a good news, bad news. Or I don't know if it's good news and bad news, but they had two stories together where they announced, speaking of lead gen, they announced some lead gen for Messenger. So they're adding in the ability to do lead gen in Messenger. So you can kind of build this very fancy chatbot interaction that like generates data about the, you know, the person interacting with your messenger bot, and then you can kind of get that all the way down the funnel, so those leads end up actually right in your CRM platform. And I've seen some of these in the wild, and actually people in our, we turned on our Facebook messenger chatbot on our Facebook page, and people weirdly interact with it. So far, it's mostly people saying hi. But but we do get a fair amount of people that say, you know, because then we ask, what are you here for? And then free trial is an option. So I see the notifications rolling in. So we've been trying Facebook Messenger on our page. So it'd be interesting. We'll be setting up lead gen to see if we can capture some leads this way. And then the thing they took away was the Discover tab in Messenger. So at the same time they introduced that, they said that Discover tab that no one ever used before is going away, just not getting engagement. They can focus on whatever. But I was thinking that that's like the inventory for the Facebook Messenger placement, I think. So I put a screenshot in here, JD. I don't know if you know. Like when you run an ad and you pick the placement Facebook Messenger, it used to show up in the Discover tab. That's why I thought they got all their inventory, but maybe it also shows up in other places. I don't know.
Yeah, I think also like your home, like the home feed, which, yeah, I'm not that familiar with Messenger myself. I don't have it, but I can comment on the lead gen ad because I think it's really cool. I think it's really cool that they were able to integrate. So you have the Messenger, you have an ad unit, you've also got a chat kind of bot in there as well, and then they've also incorporated their Pages product, you know? So I think it's kind of cool that they've incorporated these four and then sending it to a CRM. I mean, like that's a pretty deluxe build out as far as not even a beta, it's a full on production ready. So I was actually really impressed that they were able to do all of that pretty quickly and pretty easily. Of course, they were building off their success that they've had with lead gen ads, but very cool, very cool. I think this will work out pretty well. And I guess this will also force people to build very specific lead gen ads in Messenger. I think that's the one catch, right? So a lot of times you're like, oh, placements, lead gen ads, right? And now you're going to have to like build specific actual, you know, creative bots for Messenger when you're moving forward. So I'm interested to see how people use it. I think marketers are very creative. I think the ones that are in early are going to have the most success, and we'll see what happens.
And speaking of Messenger, Instagram has their own version. Well, you know, when you message people in Instagram, you're technically using messaging. And Instagram has had a few attempts to roll out their version of a true, like, Messenger app. So there was a product they had. It was called Direct. And it was being built by the Instagram team. But they shuttered it in May. And some people think that some of the reasons for a lot of the Instagram folks leaving, and, you know, the CEO left a while ago now, but you know, he was saying Zuckerberg was more involved in the Facebook team, was pressuring them to include more ads, probably pressuring them to shut down their work on their own Messenger app. So that happened. They shut down Direct, which was the Instagram Messenger app. But now they're developing a new one, and it's called Threads. But it is being developed on the Facebook Messenger team. So they moved that team over to the Facebook Messenger team. Now they're developing Threads. Facebook politics aside, this is another Messenger app, and this one's really built around the idea of automatic and nonstop updates that just get generated by you just living your life and the, you know, app tracking the crap out of you and sharing just with the people who you have the close friends label on. So on Instagram, you probably have noticed there's like a close friends category you could assign to folks, and those people will get this kind of nonstop update that, you know, if you're moving, it will be like, oh, you know, Paul's on the move. Or I don't know if it knows I'm on a bike or something. Maybe it'll say, Paul's biking because it knows my speed and whatever. Which, of course, is horrifying to someone like me. But I guess
Yeah. Kids
these days, this is like becoming popular. There's a few other apps that are like trying, that are doing this today, where you just have this like nonstop updating. So more of it.
I don't care. That's really what it comes down to, is I don't have a single friend that I care enough about to know when you're moving. I'm sorry. I just don't care. Like, I love my friends. I love Meg. I just don't care if you're moving. Like, so a lot of this stuff, I'm just like this almost like surveillance capitalism, right? If this has been a big trend that we've heard talk about. But like, this one is again, going into like what Zuck was talking about earlier this year, being more private, being close-knit, I understand, but this isn't really private. If this is your idea of private, like that's interesting, but this like real-time view of information about location and your speed and what you're doing, being on the move, it's just, I don't care. Like, just... And I also don't think this should be a standalone. Like, that was the other interesting part, too. This could be a different app, which the feedback for that direct app was, yeah, I don't like having two different apps, right? And so I think we're also seeing a consolidation of apps, which is what we've seen with our time, at least. But I don't know why I would need a different app. I guess a lot of this is to compete with Snapchat. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, Snapchat has the Snap Map, which essentially just shows you where all your friends are all the time. And Snapchat does have some of this kind of like, you can look and see what your friends are generally doing, where they are, if they're moving, stuff like that. So this is, some people are saying, oh yeah, this is just them copying Snapchat. They actually don't have a strategy here. The same old Facebook product strategy is just go look at whatever Snapchat did and then develop that thing. Which I'll do a Snapchat story really quick, even though we have it later, because it's not super interesting, I guess, for the paid folks. But Snapchat, who's had a nice little comeback, stock price is doing well, suddenly people care about their inventory. They're going all in on AR. I feel like that's their strategy.
Yeah.
And they introduced a bunch of new lenses, facial lens templates. So there's this whole studio you can use to create lenses. And lenses are just like those visual effects that appear on top of photos and videos when you use Snapchat. So they added a bunch of new options. It's now up to 40 different options. I actually played around with the Lens Studio before the podcast. I didn't actually build anything, but I looked through the documentation. You could do a lot of like pretty crazy stuff in terms of like, you know, can identify where the hands and head is. You can put particle effects on it. You can put makeup on things, and you could build your own, you know, lens. And it sounds silly and kind of like a novelty, but I do think they see that the future is people in AR, eventually probably VR, but the future is AR. So I think Snap is really focused on owning that AR market and all their product, even their crappy, you know, Snap glasses that nobody's going to wear, are just really getting, how do we get more people into the AR world? Because if we can own the AR world, then we can win in the future. So
they are a camera company.
Right.
They are a camera company. That's what they say. So, yeah.
Yeah, do they say that anymore? That sounds outdated now, doesn't it?
But no, I think Snap considers themselves a camera company that has Snapchat.
Right.
So, yeah, I know. Right. It's like Alphabet and Google, I think.
Right. I remember when they made a big deal about it, about how it's about, yeah, we're like a camera company. But that's when they were launching. Anyway, I think they're an augmented reality company, and they're a virtual experience company. And if the future goes virtual, they're going to be well positioned. Okay, back to Facebook, some political news. You added this one. Why don't you tell us about what Facebook's making these political advertisers do?
Yeah, so, I mean, we talked about this one before where I've talked about I was running some political ads for my uncle back in Oklahoma. Well, they have now made it even more difficult. They've added more friction to be able to run political ads. We all know we're into this political election cycle here in the U.S. And so what they're doing now, starting in mid-September, so we're only a few weeks away, is Facebook advertisers will now have to submit more information about their organization. So previously, we've had to submit information about ourselves, you know, our own driver's license, maybe a passport. We had to, then they would mail us something, and we have a code. We had to put in that code. We get approved. But now, you have a couple more options about your actual business. So this includes stuff like your tax registered organization identification number, known as the EIN. It could be a government website matching an email ending in like .gov, or if you have your FEC identification number, and then you can become a confirmed organization. So this one is pretty big. You know, I think for like smaller businesses, maybe like local politicians, this could be, you know, you could verify your name with like a phone number, a business email, you know, and you're getting your mail deliverable address. Like, where can I give you some information? So that's where we're going to see. I think it'll be kind of good. I think, again, whenever we think about adding more friction to running political ads, I'm all for it. And I think any ways that we can not only verify the user, but verify the organization or the business running it, it's only going to make it a little bit better, even though Facebook acknowledges that it's not perfect still.
Yeah, I'm on board as well, given the state of the election Facebook relationship of the past. I think they need to, if anything, err on the side of caution and add a lot of, this isn't even a lot. This is definitely a lot of hoops to jump through, but continue to add more ways to identify whether it's a legit group advertising and take some of the anonymity away from this advertising. I think that's all the Facebook news we have.
Yeah,
we should move over to the other behemoth, Google. There's a
very
tactical one. So I used to be in the local world. I used to care about Google My Business, which is the worst product name. They really can't figure out a good product name for Google My Business, GMB. But anyway, it's basically your profile page or your listing on Google Maps, which sometimes shows up in the Google search results. And if you're a small business, you have to register it. It's still a total pain to register. I think they're still doing postcard verification to make sure that you own it. Literally, AdSage has been around for 7.5 years. Just this year, we finally fixed it because for whatever reason, we've tried to do it like twice and the postcard like just never came. So we tried again. And I do believe our address is finally updated after 7 years. So anyway, Google Local has always been a bit of a cluster. But they are now putting ads on profile pages. So on the AdStage profile page on Google Maps, for instance, you could see, well, I guess it's not on the profile page. It's when you do a search and you see a listing, like a group of Google Local listings, you can see the ad in the search result. And especially on things like mobile, when you really only see like two search results. In the example they showed, it was like someone searched for, you know, Ford dealership, and the listing for the ad for Toyota dealership came up first, and then under it was the Ford listing. So it could be a bit of a confusing experience. But it's Google, you know, more inventory, more ad load, makes sense. Add some more ad units and get some more inventory.
Yeah, you know, right? So how do you get people to, you know, want to like have this ad? You show them your competition, right? And so now that this competitor is running on your brand, you're going to go and now run branded ads on something that you have no real control over. Because again, this is like the knowledge panel, like that local pack that we hear a lot of SEOs or content people talk about. And now they're putting an ad into there. And so it's a little frustrating. You know, there's no way for even businesses to pay to like have like a paid placement where you can't run ads on my profile. The only way you can do it is run ads against your own brand, which again is just seems counterintuitive to that Google tax, if you will. So not great, in my opinion. I'm guessing this is probably just a beta experiment that they're playing around with.
Yeah, that's true. We should say that this was just spotted in the wild. It was not officially launched by Google. So it's not a absolute. And also at Google, like from a product perspective, the local team are very different from the ads team. And they're usually at war with each other because the Google Maps people are like, we want to show the most accurate results. You know, people are using us for navigation and to find something they're looking for. And then the ads people are like, yeah, that's why you use ads, because you can steer the direction and, you know, reward our advertisers. And there's kind of this endless struggle between those two sides of the house, where the organic folks don't want any ads and the ads folks are like, we need to pay the bills. You know, hint, the ad people win those battles eventually. Cut to the $8 billion in revenue from Google per quarter or whatever it's up to now.
38 billion, yeah.
Yeah, 38 per quarter? Jeez.
Yeah.
It's
outrageous. So even like a 1% gain for them is billions.
Right,
so
it's pretty insane.
That's all they need to do.
So those ads will probably be coming to the local business profile soon. And then more news from Google was from YouTube. And this one, you also added this one. So what is this YouTube story all about?
Yeah, we've talked about YouTube before having trouble when they're talking about where they're running ads and what type of content ads are running against. Also around data collection and targeting practices on YouTube. So this one just came out earlier today. So this is hot off the press here, Paul. But the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, has voted to settle federal privacy charges against YouTube. So no clear exact terms yet, but it's reportedly it's going to be a fine of about $150 to $200 million, which is pennies to Google, as we just talked about. A 1% is billions, so this is 0.2%, 0.15%, right? I mean, it's like nothing for them. And it's really coming around how they're collecting data, and the fine was against COPPA, so Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. And there's a lot of senators that take this very seriously, and so they've been wanting to get it ultimately fined for this. Again, they wish it was more. They said it was partisan, but hey. So kind of the outcome of this is we saw YouTube launch YouTube Kids. So you probably have seen this as well. But it's supposed to have more discernible content filters. You know, these content filters not allowing mature videos to be on there. You can't have, they're banning targeted ads on children's videos, and they're making the videos significantly less like lucrative for creators, right? And then they're threatening an entire genre of YouTube content, right? So I ultimately, it's probably the right move. They're probably going to lose more in ad revenue than they are the fine.
The interesting thing, you know, is there is a group of people who are not shady that make a lot of money making yes. quality content for kids, and they kind of get screwed. But, you know, to protect children, that's the price you have to pay. Also, for everyone who thinks, like, government intervention, you know, there's always unintended consequences. It never works. Granted, it's too soon to tell. But Google didn't have Google Kids until they got hit with they didn't get hit with the fine at the time, but they got found in violation of this Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. And this fine has been, you know, a work in progress ever since the settlement. So it was a pending settlement, I guess is what I'm trying to say. From that date, you know, Google rolled out YouTube Kids, and, you know, now hopefully we'll have a much safer experience for children on YouTube, maybe because of government interaction. So for all the libertarians, myself, who has been on the libertarian bandwagon at times throughout my many years, sometimes government intervention works, because if you slap fines on people, even though people say 200 million means nothing, it was 2 billion, maybe Google will listen, it still can provide progress forward. I do think this is progress forward. And of course, we'll see if it keeps kids off of the real YouTube, or they just sneak on there anyway. But at least when they're small and you can control them, you can just make sure that on whatever device they use, it only gets YouTube Kids. Also, they target me nonstop on YouTube. I think every day I get an ad for YouTube Kids. I don't have kids, YouTube. You probably know that. So I don't know why you're endlessly selling me YouTube Kids.
I think this one too is also so, like, it also brings into this argument we hear all the time that, hey, let us figure it out. Like, we got this. We know what's best. And it also just goes to show that, no, you don't. And when you get in trouble, look how quick you are to react and do the right thing. Like, it's amazing how fast they rolled this out. And the restrictions and the filters that they automatically put in, like, come on, that was the right thing to do. You should have launched this years ago, but it took getting in trouble.
Well, and that's like how the world works too. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people at Google that have been working on this project for years. I'm sure there was a whole product strategy around, you know, content for children, and it's just about priorities, right? And there's a famous, I forget who said it, it's like, if you have more than top, like, three top priorities, you don't have any. And at big companies and small, that's how things work. So if it's not what you're, like, focused on doing right now, it's kind of in the list of many things that are very important that we should do, but you're trying to get those first, you know, one or two things done. And it just sometimes, as a product manager, it's hard to figure out, you know, what order, what's priority. So, you know, for me, it's just, okay, well, what's the next thing we want to do? Let's focus on doing a great job with that. Okay, then we'll pick the next thing. When something like this happens, and, you know, I'm sure the CEO calls you and there's a lot of pressure, all of a sudden this becomes the next thing. So suddenly something that was kind of floating around, maybe going to get done soon, becomes the top priority. Someone like Google can execute super quickly when they're focused, and this gets done. So it's not even about, like, the government was like, you should do this, and they're like, we don't want to. It's like, they had an incentive to do this. Government just added more incentive, because if somebody doing the math was like, okay, the increase in revenue, the decrease in revenue is this and this, and now they have to add like $200 million into the decrease in revenue column. But maybe they would have had to add $2 billion if, you know, they get fined again. So all this stuff just helps, I think.
Yep. Yep. One quick one. It was very small for YouTube. They're going to be phasing out exact counts for public-facing subscriber numbers. So when you see subscribers, it could be 461. It'll now just say like 400, right? 500. So again, we see platforms, you know, really kind of testing this out. I think I'm in some kind of beta. This is very anecdotal data about Twitter, but now when I log on to Twitter, specifically on desktop, I don't see notifications right away. I have to be on for like 30 seconds, maybe a minute, and then all of a sudden notifications pop up. So a lot of times I'll go on quickly. Do I have any notifications? No. And I move away, even though I have like 10. So it's kind of like, oh crap. Like I have to like click on notifications, go in there, kind of wait, and then they populate. So
right.
And then we saw Instagram,
right.
You know, testing, getting rid of likes. We see now YouTube testing rounding subscriber counts. So very interesting. It's kind of a macro trend, but we can move on.
Yeah, no, I'm just checking Instagram now. Still likes and views on there. So still testing that concept. So a few other stories. Well, you mentioned Twitter. Let's talk about Twitter, a quick one. They added larger images to the app install campaigns. So if you were doing app install, you got a big carousel. You got a carousel. And for the carousel, they used larger images. Must have done well because now Twitter announced they're going to expand the availability of the large image carousel to other campaign types. So makes sense. Maybe they're following Cora's large images change that you guys did a while ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably what it is. yeah, definitely following us, Twitter. Thanks for noticing.
How is it going, by the way? It's been a few months now. Has usage tripled on Cora?
Usage. No, I mean, for advertisers, a meaningful increase for CTR, which is probably the biggest thing, you know, when we kind of think through advertisers getting more clicks and how can they get those. I mean, I think that was definitely a meaningful change for them. So I think that one's pretty cool to see that impact. You know, you never quite know when it goes from a thumbnail, which is kind of small, to now all of a sudden it's like huge, right? And so we did a lot of testing, you know, 4x5, 16x9, and then testing out some different ways. And I think right now the data should be coming in today. We're going to have a full rollout of, I think, going to be 16x9,
Whoa.
Which is that classic Facebook, LinkedIn style. But now Facebook switching away from that, you know, doing more squares. So anyway, we'll get there.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, Facebook obviously is following Instagram because Instagram's all the growth and the square image. But we will see. All right, that's some inside news right there from Cora. 16x9 rolling out everywhere soon. Also news, so Spotify. So I brought up Spotify at the top of the podcast. I've been doing a lot to understand the network. You know, a year ago, who cared about podcasts as a channel? You know, nobody. Maybe 4 years ago, like no one even heard of podcasts. You'd have to explain what a podcast was. And now I was just reading in this article, 25% of the U.S. population listens to podcasts on average for 6.5 hours every week, which is insane how much people are consuming podcasts. Part of the reason Spotify bought Anchor and Gimlet Media, like I mentioned, and part of the reason why AdStage added the integration is because a lot of marketers are now talking about podcast advertising and, in many cases, creating podcasts as well.
Yeah, big fan. I'm there. I'm listening all the time. I hear you, like what, 6.5? Yeah, I'm probably right there. I'm probably right around that 6.5. ZipRecruiter, I'm never gonna pick you. I'm never gonna like do it. But man, you guys are loving some podcast ads. TriNet, you guys are all over the Vox podcast.
Yeah.
I hear you guys all the time. LinkedIn, doing a lot of podcast ads as well. But hey, get out there, test it out. I think you were still in early days for podcast ads. I think we're still in early days for a lot of companies. Big shout out to Pod Insights. Go check them out. Really cool attribution tool and analytics tool. Podinsights.com.
Is that our ad?
That'd be my ad.
All right. Well, maybe they'll send us some money. Like I said, I signed up for Anchor.fm, change our distribution to run through them, and then I signed up for the paid ad version. Of course, we're not going to make money on it. There's not enough of you marketers out there that really care this much about Google and Facebook that this is going to be a major podcast. But there's thousands. I mean, there's something like 10,000 people that listen to this podcast every month. So, you know, that's pretty good. I have no idea what an audience of 10,000 gets you. I don't know if it gets you like $5 or $500, but
Well, I mean, we'll like, find what, out. So let's see. I think like what are the CPMs now on Facebook, right? I mean, like $25 now right. for a CPM, right? So that's 1,000. You got 10,000 of those. So yeah, I mean, let's charge some money.
Right. All right. Like, well, we'll see. Well, I'll buy you dinner with the first check, and if it's
$250 a month.
Right. No. That's what you think it's going to be. All right.
No, give me more. You guys are extremely valuable. You guys are a high quality audience. I want those LinkedIn prices. I want that like $100 CPM that LinkedIn charges.
There you go. Yeah, I literally have no idea what we want to get. I just wanted to play around with the ad format. So I recorded a great video for them, and, or a great ad. So we will see. So that is the news with Spotify. And then the last two stories, TikTok. Coming up more and more every week. They've now followed the lead of Snapchat and Facebook and introduced an audience network. This is part of the playbook for rolling out your network, right? You build usage, you get usage up. Usually you run out of inventory and then you add an audience network after you've kind of stopped your own growth. TikTok is growing like a weed. I mean, they're up to 500 million MAUs, which is insane. Twitter has, 326 million monthly active users, and TikTok has 500 already. We also did talk about they're buying these, by the millions of dollars, and then a lot of them don't stay on the app. So I don't know. We'll see what happens, but it's crazy that they're already trying to build an audience network. I don't know. Do you think this is a good idea or it's a bad sign?
Yeah, I'm going to go bad sign. Fun this one. I mean, you're spending $3 million a day trying to acquire people. You're getting in a little bit of trouble. I'm interested to see how they do. Again, this is a Chinese-owned app. And right now with the trade war with the U.S., it's probably not a great time, but I get it. And then whenever I also heard like 45 minutes a day was a number that they released is the average user is spending. So 45 minutes a day and you have reportedly 500 million actively monthly users. That's a lot of inventory. Like, I'm actually like surprised that you would launch an audience network. So, I say audience network ? To be continued, because right. I think there's more to this story than we just need to get ads, in other places.
Ad revenue is tiny, that you still have to sign up the old fashioned way with a sales rep, and you can't just buy programmatically quickly. So you would assume they have way more inventory than advertisers wanting to buy inventory. I mean, with 500 million users, I imagine there would be a list of brands waiting at the door, especially in, you want China as a market, you're moving to China. It seems like a no-brainer. So interesting move for of all the things to add an audience network. And then our last story is our crazy clean room. So we just talked about the clean rooms. I think it was Google or Facebook we talked about the clean
Facebook.
Room. Facebook. Right. Where you go to Facebook with a briefcase with your data, and they have a briefcase with their data, and you open them, you have little computers in there in my imaginary scene here, and then you exchange like a thumb drive or something, and some magical data comparison happens. Apparently, this is becoming normal. So, Google has Data Hub, and now Amazon also has. Well, reportedly, they did not comment on this, but sources say it's supposed to launch an open beta by early next year.
Yeah, I am with you. I also imagine a very white room. It's very clean. I expect lots of like gloves to be worn that is like touching the thumb drive and the data. And even when I hear data, I'm thinking like stacks of paper, right. Even though it's not true. But anyway, yeah, clean room. I mean, I this is very interesting to me. So I think it's pretty cool. We just wanted to follow up on this article because we heard, Facebook doing it. We know Google does it. And now Amazon's doing it as well. So it makes complete sense. I think it's pretty cool. If you're out there and you've ever done and been in a clean room, please tweet us. I'm so interested to learn more about this.
Yeah, I would love to do an episode on what it's like to be in an Amazon clean room. I'll use that voice the entire episode, too. We'll be like one of those history podcasts where Genghis Khan came over the mountaintop with his horde of blah, blah, blah.
You could have sound effects, too, in the background.
Right.
Roar!
podcasting is going to just turn into like radio from like the 1920s or something, or whenever radio had its golden years before TV. I did read this article too, and Amazon is, well, at least the people who talked about this said, Amazon only does this for very large brands. You need an enterprise deal with Amazon. And they don't give you granular data about individual purchasers. They only give you data aggregated to groups of 50. And the goal is, you know, to give you more like insight into people who like saw your product multiple times, or people, you know, in different demographics. It's basically because you can't get any data from Amazon about the performance of your campaign. It's very limited. In fact, not many people plug again for AdStage. We announced an Amazon integration, but there's very few people that have API access to Amazon beyond, I think, like four of us. So if you want access to your Amazon data, it's extremely difficult to get. And yes, we do have access to their reporting, but people want all the same reporting they get from other networks, like demographic information and, you know, impression share and all this stuff. And Amazon basically gives you the basic information, and they've always been that way. So people think this is a big step forward, that Amazon's even willing to start giving big brands more insight to how their products are performing on Amazon.
Agreed.
I think that's it.
That's all I get. Yeah, that's it. We knocked them out.
That's a lot of stuff for you, but it's good to have you back, JD. If you want to hear more, you know what? Maybe we should use our ending plug to go plug Apple Podcasts, because as I was setting up our podcast on Anchor.fm, they recommend promoting Apple Podcasts, because apparently those iTunes ratings are what get you listens. So if you're listening to this, go to iTunes, smash that like button, write some reviews, get us lots and lots of dollars in rev share.
What podcast are you listening to?
Right.
That's amazing. Smash that like button.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, that's definitely
wow.
a meme. It's definitely
that's
a
really
meme.
Good.
Smash that like button. Mostly the YouTube streamers do a lot of smash that like button. We would appreciate it if you go to your podcast app of choice and give us a good rating or review. And you could always head over to blog.adstage.io and sign up over there for a good old-fashioned email newsletter. Those are all the headlines we have, so you enjoy your week, everyone.
We'll see you later.
That was terrible timing to take a drink.
You caught me off guard there.